Hi, thanks for joining us on the Little Breakfast podcast. My name is Clive and I'm a pastor in a church called Kirtlesdon Community Church, just on the edge of Edinburgh. And you might be asking, why is this called the Little Breakfast podcast? It sounds a little bit random. Well, it's not entirely random and it's not entirely about food, although we might mention a little bit about food. It's really about looking at what the Bible has to say in relation to culture. And given that we are in a big cultural shift at the minute, we thought it'd be a good idea to make this podcast. And the Little Breakfast does have a bigger brother called the Big Breakfast, which is a live gathering that happens a number of times through the year, where we look at a range of subjects. And those subjects include autism, art, epistemology, how do we know anything, looking at what discipleship is, was it to live out the gospel in the 21st century. So a whole range of different subjects that we have been looking at in the Big Breakfast, where we gather together and have a pretty big breakfast. But now we're on our own or with our families in isolation, we thought it'd be a good idea to create the Little Breakfast. And the Little Breakfast will enable us to really think through what is going on, particularly in the middle of this crisis called the Corona pandemic. So we're going to be thinking through, how do we navigate a crisis? How do we navigate a storm? And today I'm going to be speaking to Dr. Gerald McNinch, who is an elder, but also is a psychologist. And so it's going to be an interesting discussion about how do we think about navigating a crisis, thinking that through biblically, culturally, and how do we learn from the past, but also what do we learn about what God might be saying in the present too. So thanks for joining us. I'm pleased to say I've got Gerald McNinch with me. Morning, Gerald.
Morning.
So, Gerald, this is called The Little Breakfast, so mm-hmm. It would be remiss of me to not ask you, what did you have for breakfast?
Well, I had my usual mix of nuts, seeds, fruit and yogurt.
Sounds very healthy.
Yes.
And would that be your regular sort of breakfast?
Every morning.
Every morning, including the weekend?
Including the weekend.
So not even the cheeky treat for the weekend?
No. I stick to that every day.
All right. Okay. So regardless of any sort of, you know, health regimes that you might have to adhere to, if you didn't just have that healthy breakfast, what would be your ideal breakfast?
Well, strangely enough, my ideal breakfast is Weetabix.
Is it really?
It is.
What does that say about the personality?
Exactly. Yeah. I find much as I like a cooked breakfast, for example, I can't really cope with it very much too frequently. You know, if I'm on holiday or something, I might do that, but
yeah,
I don't. It's not for me. So, yeah. It's all about how I feel over the day as well, you know.
Yeah. Sometimes what you think your body's telling you to eat or not.
Yeah.
My breakfast this morning was Special K with the dried fruit in it, which is quite nice, with a bit of natural yogurt and a banana. So it's pretty healthy sandwich.
Yeah,
as well.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it wouldn't be my ideal.
All right, what's your ideal?
Well, my ideal would be a fry-up. I mean, obviously, you can't have that every day.
No.
But there's variants of fry-ups. So I think within the UK, possibly the best one is an Ulster fry, because you get a cheeky sort of potato scone with that and soda farrel. So there's a little bit extra going on there.
Yeah.
But possibly the best fry-up that I ever had was in Cape Town. I was at a conference there for a week and I came downstairs and they kind of did this made to order thing where they would say, you know, do you want an omelette, do you want eggs, how do you want your bacon done, how do you want this done? And the first sort of day I was like, oh man, I don't know if I could do this every day. And by day five, I was still tracking it. I was still on it because it was there and it was available.
Yeah, and it was fresh. Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think we can sustain that unless you're a farmer out there working 12-hour shifts.
Exactly. And then it is essential. That's the whole purpose of it. Yeah.
Well, exactly. And when you do involved in a work where you're using your mind more, probably not. So anyway, so we're here. We've spoken about the food aspect of the little breakfast, which I think is quite a nice thing to do. Food's a grounder. It helps us. We need food. But, you know, interestingly, we don't just eat food like it's tablets, do we? We actually eat food to enjoy it, and it's good, and you know, it's a social thing. But here we are in a scenario where we're certainly not going to be sitting around a restaurant table or sitting around the table of friends and family out with our house, because we are in what is known as a lockdown.
Yeah.
And really the purpose of our conversation this morning on this podcast is to think through, okay, we're in this storm, and it's a real shift in culture that's been happening. And really, how can we get through this? I mean, how can we actually navigate this storm? And so where I'd like our conversation to sort of start off with and be in the parameter of is really, how does knowing truth, how does using our minds, thinking about what is truth, actually help us navigate a crisis, navigate a storm? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that the reality of the truth that you own is actually it's highlighted more and has a power when you're in the difficult situations. So in fact, in a lot of ways, for example, I have been really focusing over the past few days on it's in Isaiah 26:3. You keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on you because he trusts in you. And then it goes on to say, trust in the Lord forever, for the Lord God is an everlasting rock.
Yeah.
And when things are straightforward, it's not that we don't have that peace, but it doesn't necessarily, it's not highlighted, or it doesn't shine as strong, I suppose, or we're not tapping into it at the same level as when we're in a difficult situation. So truth is something, you know, that comes to the fore. What we believe actually, you know, comes to the fore in real strength when we're in a difficult situation. And, you know, many people are talking about how, for example, the truth that they own, like, for example, from Scripture, actually, it's coming to their mind in this situation. And they're talking about it having more meaning than ever because of the situation. So what we feed on actually has an impact. And I'm talking about what we read or what we listen to or what we watch. Actually, what we're feeding on has an impact on the daily vagaries of life in that we come up against. Either it neutralizes us, in some ways it kind of numbs us to things, for example, or it actually it empowers us in a way.
Okay, so that's really interesting. And I want to take a couple of steps back or pull a couple of the layers back on what you said. You spoke about how, you know, what we think is truth essentially is amplified in a storm. Mm-hmm. And I suppose really what I'm trying to get my head around with that in terms of us understanding or knowing, another way of putting it, you could say, I guess, is our worldview, like what really sort of navigates us when there isn't a storm, is really brought to the fore in when there is a storm. Can you give us an example of that? Like if somebody's struggling with this sort of crisis, what might they have been believing about themselves or about the world?
So if, for example, you your security, let's say, for example, your security is in, I'm trying to think of an example here that would really kind of impact.
In your work, in your job.
Yeah. So for example, if you feel that the world is unsafe, right? Is this an example? So if you feel that you're not, the world is not safe, and then something like this happens,
yeah,
that would happen, and now it proves that point, do you know?
Yeah.
Or if you believe that like say for example, if you believe that money, money is your safety, your security, and you need to store it up, and then you find yourself in a place where actually you're being laid off because you know, there's no work for you because of this situation, then your anxiety will go up because actually, without realizing it, sometimes you put your security in that. You believe that money is a security.
Okay. So can I just pause you there? Because I think that's really interesting. But I think what's really helpful is to try and break that down even more. So there's a good example. So if your security, what you believe to be, is true, then goes, and then that raises somebody's sort of anxiety and affects their mental health. What is the process between sort of knowing that, the underlining knowing, and the coming into reality of that situation, of that storm? So if somebody sort of, you know, think about what technically is known as epistemology, how do we know anything? And then ontology is believing, being, our being. You know, where's the interplay of, I know this is more technical if people are listening and they may know this stuff or not, but you know, I guess what we're talking about is the link between being and knowing, isn't it? And how does that work in what you've described?
Well, I think fundamentally it's actually, you can know something, but you don't believe it. And so believing is about being fully convinced of something. Okay. Yeah. And that in itself is where the security comes from. So we know many, many things, but that doesn't mean to say that we necessarily believe it, because belief is where it becomes owned.
Yes.
We own it for ourselves. Okay. So often what has to happen is you need to, when you believe something, actually, you believe it for a variety of reasons. You believe it because you've kind of you've explored the subject or whatever it happens to be, but you also believe it from evidence, right? So if your evidence builds up on something that you believe, like for example, on money. So you notice that you feel calm when you've got money. You know, you've got plenty of money, etc. Then you start to believe, yeah, that proves that money is my security.
Yeah.
Right? The problem is that when you make something like that a security, when it actually is no longer there, you find yourself crumbling, because the absence of it means that there's an insecurity comes, and what you've actually believed in some cases actually proves to be false.
That's really helpful. Yeah. So, and I think this is really what I want us, we have been, sort of picking really, is that we can see truth sometimes as some sort of thing that's over there, like a coat that you go and get and you put on now and again, as if it's some sort of thing that you can choose to sort of own. So if you think so, and that can be in a wide spectrum, can't it? So you can have, you can be on the really conservative end of things theologically, or really liberal end, but both will adopt a sort of understanding of the truth, like it's maybe a coat or a blanket, you know, that I'm now going to access my understanding of truth. And I guess what you're describing, I mean, where I think it's helpful for us to think about, well, how do we actually how do we actually know what truth in itself is, or how do we actually embody that, is helpful, because in a sort of age that we live in where truth has become so relative and I think also confusing, it becomes hard to make sense of the world when there isn't a crisis. But when there is a crisis, it's a little bit like, well, how do you actually process things using your mind and your emotions, you know, connecting with that? And that's what we're kind of getting at, isn't it? I think it's like truth is not just a blanket or a coat you go and access, but it's actually much more specific, isn't it, to that?
And I think the thing is, for a Christian, the Bible isn't about, it's not a set of words. It's actually a relationship.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a great example is, you know, in relation to peace, as I was talking about there, that Jesus himself said, he says, peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you, right? Yeah. And so it's actually something of himself that he's imparting. We have a relationship with the truth. You know, we see the truth as living and active.
Yeah.
And so when you own the truth in that sense, it is this relationship with it, in the sense that it applies in your everyday life.
Yeah.
You're trusting God and his truth in the small things, and you see that aliveness of that in your day-to-day living.
Yeah.
So it's an ongoing deepening of that relationship, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just made me think of another thing as you were saying that, and maybe another way of talking about this embodying the truth and how we do that, and how that sometimes might be confusing, is for a number of years, as somebody that's been brought up in a generation that has been encouraged just to think about oneself and emotions as being the overriding sort of way that we process life, I think we also need to think, don't we, about how subjectivity and objectivity works in terms of truth. Because again, on the spectrum of things, people can be all about objective truth, and others can be all about subjective truth and just what you believe. But it has to be both, doesn't it? So how does that work in a similar way to what you've been saying?
Well, I think it's this thing about understanding that you, with truth, whatever it, you know, and experiencing, you genuinely will experience things.
Yeah.
But you can't use that as the determining factor in terms of whether what you're experiencing. It can't just all be down to experiencing, is basically what I'm saying. So there's the two sides to it. There's the reality of it, which is the objective part. In other words, the truth is the truth is the truth.
Yeah.
Regardless of how I feel.
Yeah.
But it's also true that if I'm living in that truth, I will experience.
Yeah.
You know, so there will be a subjective component to that, in terms of its meaning to us and its application.
Yeah.
But you could be in a difficult time, and you're like we are at the moment, and you can feel everything disturbed, and you can feel everything out of order. Now, in that moment, you're feeling those things, but that doesn't alter the fact that God is God, and that his truth is truth, and that you can have peace in the middle of the storm. Do you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
The peace is all, say, for example, the peace is always there, but you actually might be kind of caught with the challenges and the difficulties of life. But when you quieten down and you give time for God to speak, then you start to, I suppose, see and experience the peace again. Do you know? So it's because the other side is true. If you have, so there's the part whereby, you know, you're wanting to experience whatever the truth might be, and if you mark it on that, then the other thing is also true, that if you're in a difficult time and you're feeling unpleasant things, that you can then believe, oh, my peace has gone. Do you know?
Yeah.
Do you know? Or my happiness has gone, or whatever it happens to be. Do you know? So if we mark things on emotion, we can get false readings, I suppose.
Yeah. So that's really helpful, and I think that, you know, culturally, many of us have been swimming in the subjective understanding of truth as being equated to just how we feel, because so much of our media and advertising and culture is all about, you need to feel happy, you need to feel good, you need to feel romantic, you need to feel, you know, all these kind of things. So that what happens is, you know, you don't feel great about your job, so the thing to do is, well, if it's not making you feel great, then you go and get another one.
Yeah.
Or you don't feel good about your relationship, well, just trade that relationship in for another one. And so it feels like, and we can know that, looking at this subjectively and objectively, that we have been in this pattern, and certainly in the Western world, for, you know, at least 40, if not 50 years, and it's increasingly become more about subjectivity. So part of the reason for us having this discussion about truth is to help us to see, actually, I think that we've absorbed a lot of subjective thinking. Mm. And when we face a crisis and a storm like this, it strips a lot of that away, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And we, you know, so often the case is that when we do that pulling away, you know, oh, I'm not happy in my job or whatever, much as there can be legitimate reasons for that, there's so many things that when we pull away from those things, we don't grow.
Yeah.
Challenges actually help us to grow. They help to mature us. They give us resources for further, you know, life experience of that kind gives us resources for further down the line in life, where there might be other events where we draw on those experiences. And if we continually pull away from them, then, you know, just because for a subjective reason, I don't like it, then we don't grow. Because it's like it's these things that actually cause us to grow, in such a variety of ways. So the key thing is actually to take an objective look at our subjective experiences, you know, and make the decisions, you know, from that basis. In other words, we're using both experiences. I'm not feeling comfortable, for example, in this job at the moment, but then taking an objective view of it and saying, right, so what is going on here? You know?
Yeah.
Because the danger is also, we might be feeling unhappy and we might project it onto the job when it's actually nothing to do with the job. So we need to take an objective view to evaluate it properly and then make decisions from that basis, and not rob ourselves of crucial experiences that grow us and build us in who we are as people. And you know, and then, you know, how is God wanting to refine us in these situations? We need to be asking those questions. What is God saying in these situations? What is God wanting out of this situation? You know, so we then give ourselves the opportunity to develop as a result.
So in a kind of situation where there's supposed normality, which is hard to sort of pin down what normality is. A lot of people are talking about a new normality. I guess that there's more room when there isn't a crisis to try to avoid situations because you want to sustain your subjective understanding as keeping a sense of happiness. But of course, what we've got now is a commonality where we can't sort of avoid the crisis because it's global and it's a reality. So how does that affect different personality types? How do different personalities respond to objective truth, which we're facing now, in a way that might be helpful if people are listening?
Well, I think, I don't know if this is what you're meaning by this, but I think when we face these kind of situations, actually who we are as people, you know, how we're made, how we're wired, however you want to put it, you know, we will deal with these situations very differently.
Yeah.
So for example, if you're somebody who is quite you like the random, you like the kind of ad hoc, the unexpected, etc. You like to think outside the box, that type of thing.
Yeah.
You people like that might find this situation as it stands at the moment. It can change as things, you know, progress, because the longer it is, that can have an effect. But they might embrace this situation in a way that they see it as a challenge and or even an opportunity. But if you, for example, somebody who likes order and is organized, etc., there's often a period that people are going through with this, which I've heard from numerous people, is that they found themselves quite anxious and even a bit low in mood. And it's the reason is not because they've got a deep underlying anxiety issue or they've got depression or anything like that. It's actually because the disorder, because that's their nature, it actually knocks that off until they find a way to get things back into order.
Yeah.
And so understanding yourself is really important in these kind of times, you know.
Yeah.
And understanding that's what that's about. It's a normal response from your personality type to this situation.
That's really interesting, because I think that is helpful in understanding our understanding of truth in a time when there isn't a crisis as well, isn't it?
Yeah,
so you're talking about amplifying things.
Yeah.
Because you can view things in a crisis in a way that it takes the lid off things, but actually that will be the case when it's calmer than actually, but it's just kind of under the surface, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So you have people, for example, who are very ordered at their work. Okay. And they find themselves, they can go in the morning quite calm, but their inbox, and you know, be that physical or electronic inbox, starts to fill up, and things come in that need to be dealt with and organised. And when those things don't sit in their proper filing, if you like, people can be quite anxious about that. And once they get everything back into order, their anxiety level comes back down.
Yeah.
You know? So it's even in small things, being aware of who we are and how we're made, you know, our particular personality types, all these kind of things, is really a useful thing to understand in terms of how we deal with life. And we're sitting in a situation at the moment where these different personality types and how we respond to things is magnified. You know, and sometimes it's being able to say, well, if this is how I am, this is a normal response for me. I don't need to worry about it. It'll settle once I get and, you know, round my mind around this for myself, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Just two other things I want to explore just briefly in relation to what you've just said is that I think what a crisis often amplifies for me. Let's take a non-global crisis. Let's take grief, for instance, you know, the loss of a loved one. It's almost as if, because we live in this subjective sort of state of we must be feeling happy all the time, is sometimes people don't know what to do with feeling sad. So somebody, they've lost the loved one, or they've lost a job, or there's been a big transition, and it's like, oh, I'm feeling sad. I'm supposed to feel happy. Let's move on from this. And I think part of the truth that we're talking about is acknowledging that of course you'll feel sad, or of course you'll feel more anxious at this time. It's more normal and true to be in that state, isn't it, than than to try to sweep that under the carpet, you know?
Exactly, exactly. So facing the thing, like the you know, the many sort of elements of grief that people go through, one of the key things in there is acceptance, is accepting the reality of that.
Yeah.
So in and there's different ways of describing it, but one way, if you look at kind of life and people, you know, as we age, if you like, imagine that you start off with a small circle, and life experience means that you as a look in the circle, it grows and grows and grows. And what's happening is we're incorporating all our life experiences into the life experiences in our history into our developmental, if you like, circle like that. And when something comes along that is new, it sits like a bubble on the outside. Now, yeah. And you know it's there, and it kind of irritates in some kind of way. Now, if you ignore it, it's not going to go away. It's because it's now part of your story, like grief, for example. And yeah. So eventually, what you want to do is face it, respond to it, look at the what you're feeling, what you're thinking, etc., etc. And eventually, it becomes part of your history, part of your story. And it's still there, part of your story, but it's no longer causing a pressure and an incapacity in some cases. When it's not dealt with, you know, when we process, when we face things and we work them through, they lose the overwhelmingness of them, and eventually, you know, incorporate them in.
And that's really helpful, because if, for instance, in a parent-child situation, if you had a child who was sort of like 3 years old, and they were saying, you know, that they wanted to drive the car, you know, you'd be saying, well, I'm really sorry, but you can't drive the car, you know, for a number of obvious reasons. But they might find that hard to accept, that reality. They might be, well, you know, I just want to do this. It's what I want, because they're a toddler. And part of maturing and growing is that I suppose we don't stay as spiritual toddlers, that we've my own experience is that, you know, going on in my walk with God has meant more pain in some ways in or refining, because it's coming to accept what is truly true, you know, rather than I believe it's truth and we know it's truth. But actually, if we really want to mature and grow, we've got to accept, as you're saying, the things like grief, like scenarios that we cannot change because of living in a fallen world, and one day all things will be made new. But it's that there's a refining process in that, isn't there? It's pruning that goes on.
Absolutely. And if we're living in a very subjective way, we actually think that, for example, pain, upset, difficulties, they shouldn't be happening. But actually, Jesus himself said, in this world you'll have troubles. The reality of life is the reality of life. But the truth is also the truth. God is God. God will hold us and sustain us through difficulties. The assumption with the subjective thing is, God, take this away, take this away. When actually God's saying, no, I want to take you through. I want to take you through. Because going through, you are going to grow and you're going to learn. There's going to be a whole range of different developments in there. And you will also, ultimately, as you see in many cases, you know, lots of stories of different people in the Bible, is they learn more about who God is in the midst of the trial, that God is faithful, that God is able, etc. And you learn the reality of that truth, that you believe in the quiet time, you know, that is the reality of his power and his enabling through it all. And it's transformative, rather than, which we don't have if we avoid it, basically.
And I think a lot of what you just said is a really strong indicator of why it's important to think biblically, theologically, and culturally, because a lot of what we've been talking about is actually trying to unravel how much the worldview over the past 50 years has influenced us to such a point where we just feel it's our right to be pain-free and happy and have an easier life, you know?
Yeah.
And that is not reality.
No.
And that is not true. And that's what we've been discussing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So just as we kind of wrap up here, so what, how can we move through this day by day? Is it prayer? Is it reading the Bible? Is it both? Is it speaking to one another? How do we help one another see what is truly true?
Well, absolutely. Obviously, making sure that you are reading the Bible, that you are praying, are absolutely crucial. And as we had in our prayer points on Sunday, it was finished with the line of read your Bible twice as much as you listen to the news. And I think that balance is really good. I think it's so easy, especially with 24-hour news, and because we're in a very changing situation, there's so much we can just keep absorbing of that, of the news, you know, yeah, etc. And I think we have to be careful about what we watch and what we're listening to. So it's balanced. Get your information and then, you know, move on from it, if you see what I mean. Because it can be very, very disturbing, and it can be too absorbing. So a balance is what I think is necessary. We need to keep ourselves informed. We need to follow the guidelines, et cetera, et cetera. And that is really, really important. But we need to get it in perspective. And from a Christian point of view, I think we need to be nurturing and encouraging each other. You know, I'm not saying we don't talk about it, but I'm saying that we nurture and encourage each other with the truth and what God's saying to us and what, you know, what we're hearing, and you know, build each other up in the truth in that way. So social contact is really, really important, and we are blessed at this time with such things such as WhatsApp and Skype and FaceTime and all these other different mediums that we have to use, and we must take advantage of all of that. And you know, whether you're more reserved or you're more like just the broad statements of whether you're more introvert or extrovert, we all need some level of social contact. Wherever we sit on that kind of spectrum, we need social contact, and that's really, really important in whatever form works for you. So that is really important, I think. And being careful in what we watch, that's about not just about
the news,
but other things, you know, being careful about that. And also, you know, it's so easy because we live in this culture where, you know, we're so bombarded, we're so distracted all the time by things, you know, whether it's watching TV, watching films, et cetera, et cetera, that we can easily, when in this kind of time where, for example, maybe people are not working or they're working less, et cetera, that we choose to just fill the space with on a magnified level with the things that we would use to relax doing an evening, etc. It's really good, important to fill our time with things that stimulate us as well.
Yeah.
When we're out and about, we're taking in things, we're interacting with people, etc. on a variety of levels. We have stimulation, and because things are quieter, we need to find ways to stimulate ourselves that are actually interesting and developmental, in a sense. If there's space and time, the opportunity to learn things that, you know, we wouldn't have space and time to do if we were working, for example. Use the time for that as well.
Yeah, exactly. And use the time to be creative and make a podcast, for instance.
Yeah, exactly. No. Well, exactly. I mean, this is something I've never done. before. Well, I've done a wee bit of radio, but nothing very much in this kind of thing. And this is a great, sort of thing to do. Absolutely. Yeah, and obviously we're stuck in, so you've got to find ways to be creative in different ways. You've got to find different ways for activity. And I think this was something I heard, and I thought this is really quite an important thing. In terms of getting out and about, we're limited, obviously, you know, to what is it, one walk a day or whatever, yeah, exercise outside in a day. It's important, actually, to make sure that we get some direct sunlight. So even things that we wouldn't think about, like opening the window,
yeah,
and letting you know, not only the fresh air in, but also allowing the sun to kind of, you know, work on our skin, et cetera. And you know, doing that kind of thing is really important as yeah, well, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. So
there's one other thing that I think is really important is it's important not to change your normal rhythm. So, because everybody's going to go back to work, okay, at yeah, some point along the line here. And it's really important that you don't knock off your sleep rhythm, your sleep pattern. So yeah, if you normally go to bed at a certain time during the week, go to bed at the same time. And if you normally get up at a certain time during the week, get up at the same time.
Yeah.
Right? That might be the time to go for your walk because you'd normally be going to work. So it's really quite a crucial thing to try and keep the same rhythm because it does have an effect on our mental health and our emotional, you know, our mental and emotional psychological health. It's yeah, important to try and keep the rhythm as well. Just kind of practical things that are really important.
Yeah, I guess it's trying to sort of do what you can do that's routine because yes, obviously there's elements that you can't keep routine
exactly,
because of the crisis. So exactly, yeah, well that's it, you know. So make sure you get your Horlicks at night if you've had your Horlicks at night before, or your cocoa. Okay, well there's going to be loads more to be discussing about this. I think we'll check in once a week and do this mm-hmm, podcast while we're in the midst of this, and I hope mm-hmm, that folks have found that really helpful. It's been helpful to discuss this. There's a load of stuff in there. If people have found that really helpful, we'll find a way of you getting in touch with us somehow through social media, and be great to hear if, you know, this has been helpful and a blessing to people. And that's what we want it to be, because we want to be thinking through what we're doing and how we're living in life, both, you know, biblically and theologically and culturally. So and we have to be doing that. Otherwise, we're just becoming consumers, aren't we?
Yeah.
And we're going to get spiritually unwell if we don't as well.
Yeah.
So great. Thanks for joining me, Gerald. Yeah. Hope you enjoy your healthy breakfast tomorrow.
Thank you. And you great, too. You too.
Yeah, I might have a cheeky fry in the weekend. All right. Great. Thanks for chatting. Okay. Bye.